Testing 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
This is AVXL episode 15, recorded June 2nd, 2015. Welcome to AVXL, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content, no matter what your budget is.
Hey, I am Robert Heron. As I look around, I couldn't pay attention. We are out of practice,
and I am Patrick Norton. The dogs are crying on the other side of the wall. There's an adoption agency for wayward dogs and cats. There's a kitten pen in there.
Oh.
If you're ever having a bad day, just go over and see if they'll let you in the kitten pen.
Go pick up some dog poop. That's all you need to do. Save the world, one pile at a time.
Yeah, well. They're very good about picking up all the poop around here, which is really glorious. Oh, my goodness. We need to apologize for the delay since the last podcast. We had this really amazing dovetailing of travel, which turned into a mom rescue for Robert.
It was work. Work and then the mom trip involved.
Then I actually took a vacation for the first time in 18 months, mostly involving working on my house and watching.
Of course.
And watching, like, way too much Netflix until 4 in the morning. But I caught up. I finally watched the whole Penny Dreadful series.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I've been doing battle with Netflix. They're upping their game with that whole blocking people using VPNs and other things. So
spend the money.
I had to up my anti whatever. My countermeasures have been upgraded. So
I don't even know what that means right now. Well, I was watching Penny Dreadful on Showtime, and I pay for Showtime, I pay for Netflix, I pay for HBO, all streaming, and of course I've got Amazon Prime, because without having, you know, motor oil delivered to me in 2 days for free, really, what would my life be? You know, I get speaker stands delivered from Amazon. I'm just, every so often I turn around and realize Amazon really does have just about everything. Except for the one obscure part I need tomorrow.
I am a frequent shopper, I admit.
Oh my goodness.
I love the Amazon.
So we're working on a mobile rig and a way to record our stuff when we're traveling, so this doesn't happen again, because we were several episodes short last month, and we owe you for that. We'll make it up, we swear.
Definitely. Yeah, my time away was also spent at Samsung's Q&A test lab again, working on their upcoming 9800. That's their full array local dimming, the KS9800.
Fully shiny.
Super shiny. And I'm looking forward to seeing that, especially side by side with the OLEDs of the world and the other super premium TVs out there.
Super premium.
Should be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well out of my price range.
I have to say, though, I am almost as excited about the KS8000 that really? I keep seeing in Costco.
Same glass?
Yeah, should be. I am really curious to see what they would tone down a little bit on, because it's going to be using the same quantum dot material for expanded color palette. It is going to hit at least 1,000 nits, and it looks like it even in the show floor.
I'm
going to
make a joke that Samsung isn't going to think is funny, but it's a joke. Maybe they'll just make it, like, you know, interpolate pixels really badly or scale really poorly.
Unlikely. They have to save something. Well, of course, on the premium end, you're going to have better backlighting systems on
LCDs.
Probably
faster processor for the applications and stuff.
Maybe.
Oh, my goodness. Google I.O., if you're a fan of Amazon's Echo or Alexa, Alexa, bring me toast, which doesn't exactly work, but the...
we can make it work.
Well, it's funny because we're watching an interesting battle right now, right? Yeah, Amazon... total failure on their phone attempts. Doing pretty good with the Fire Stick. Amazon Prime has become a tremendous platform for watching video, including, you know, 4K UHD streaming. You know, the Alexa Echo is turning into this sort of central point where you can talk to your house or talk to your computer or talk to your network or talk to, you know, the cloud, if you will, right?
Yes.
So, and everybody's been looking around going like, psst, Google, hey. Google. So Google at Google I.O. this year dropped Google Home, which is essentially their voice-controlled system. A little different than Amazon Alexa, because it's Google. But Home is brought to you by the brains behind the Chromecast, kind of like the guy that was running that team. You know, which also reminds me to tell everybody that the Nexus player is dead. Yeah, you didn't even know there was a Nexus player, did you?
I have no clue what that is, but I did buy a Google Chromecast yesterday, actually.
Yeah, that's why nobody bought a Nexus player.
Another one. It's like the third one I own.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because the Nexus player was like the Google Media player that nobody used. No disrespect, if you're using one, it's probably pretty awesome. But the other thing that came out, Daydream is Google's future VR platform. They came up with a new headset spec, which is again going to be open for people to build, although it looks like Google's going to compete with people. But it's an interesting thing to look at in the context of what Roku CEO Anthony Wood was saying in an interview with Business Insider last week. He says, quote, "We sell more streaming players than anyone, but it's also probably not the most important part of our business. The most important part of our distribution business is TV licensing, as in, you know, putting the operating system inside of the Roku OS inside of TVs or creating Roku TVs." And he basically feels he's in this kind of mano-a-mano battle with Google Cast or Android TV because Apple and Amazon don't license.
Whose platform shall be supreme, so to speak?
Well, the other thing it said that kind of blew my mind is their big revenue stream isn't licensing, isn't box sales, but apparently is advertising revenue. So, you know, and that's why they want to be in all the TVs or as many TVs as they can get. And I thought that was interesting because he's like, well, you know, we started the company, we started making these boxes. We're like, everybody's going to need one of these. And then not everybody needed one. People use the stuff that's built into the TV, no matter how crappy it is, which is foolish. Go buy a Roku or an Apple TV or a Chromecast.
I'm using the apps built into a Samsung TV, an older one, not old, a couple years old now.
Right.
And I keep longing for my mom's Apple TV that's connected to her TV for a lot of basic apps that just either don't exist or are mediocre at best or aren't being updated anymore and they look ancient and perform like crud. And so yeah, I'm down with that. I really miss just the selection of apps that you just don't get on a lot of smart TVs. So
that was what kind of I separated. I was in part because, you know, my projector predates any kind of television operating system that's worthy of the name. And then every time I went to try to adopt, when I'd have a television for testing, I would be like, yeah, I'm going to use my Roku. Yeah, I'm going to use my Apple TV. Yeah, I'm going to use my home theater PC. Yeah, I'm going to, you know, because I don't use, you know, I did use Netflix on my Blu-ray player several months ago.
I love my game consoles for the reason they usually have plenty of horsepower for running these kind of apps. And the interfaces tend to be much better than I see on a lot of TVs or even smaller, you know, set-top boxes. But still, hard to beat a Roku, hard to beat an Apple TV.
That's true.
Especially if you're in one of those formats or ecosystems already. So,
by the way, if you're thinking about buying an Xbox One, do us a favor, wait till after E3 because it is almost guaranteed that there'll be two new Xboxen announced at E3.
I'm waiting on that Neo version of the PS4. I need a. I'm gonna give my old PS3 one more repair fix to see if I can cure it of
Once
what
more
ails it.
With feeling.
I did.
Did
boot
you have
up,
to
though.
Pull like the heat sinks off and reattach them?
I took the whole thing apart.
Oh my goodness!
And thought I did it right, but the fan whirs up to like 100%. So I'm thinking that might be something not touching something.
Put liquid
just
cooling
right
in it.
So, if it would just boot up and prevent me from... actually, it turns on. It just doesn't get past initial stuff. So,
it powers up. It just doesn't do anything.
Anyway, if the new PS4, that Neo version that has the bumped-up processing and whatnot, comes out at a reasonable price, I'm going for that for sure. I did pull out my classic PS3, the launch edition one, just to look at it. And it is incredibly... It's in great condition. We'll say the chrome bits are still nice and shiny and not scratched.
Well, you haven't touched it.
I booted it up to make sure it still worked, and I put it right back in the box. And
it's no longer mint.
No,
open the box.
I didn't have the original
box.
This was a replacement unit from another one that had failed.
Oh, funny.
So,
well,
so this is the one I must cherish for the long term. So, but anyway, it fired right up. It looked good.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you to everybody who answered my request for email questions. Do you ask at avxl.com? We were dealing with our mail forwarding system stopped forwarding mail, and that's been fixed. I know because we got a bunch of email from you, so thank you for that. My favorite email, thank you for your blood and email. Speaking of revenue, Mike writes, I have been downloading some movies and the blacks are pixelated and calibrated using the AVS 709 and Monster Disc. They're supposed to be Blu-ray downloads, so I want to know if you know where I can download the real Blu-ray or 4K version of some movies. Oh, man. Well, you could subscribe to Netflix or Amazon.com. Well, okay, those are streaming services, right? You can buy them off of Apple TV. You know, if you buy the Blu-ray disc, you will often... you know, get what's that horrible, useless streaming and downloadable format that they started to push in?
Oh, DivX?
No, the one after that.
Who are you talking about?
You would buy it, you know. I laugh because it was like that's how badly it sucked.
Well, I mean, I still use Ultraviolet and things like that.
That's the one, Ultraviolet.
Well, that's ultra. That's 4K. I mean, I kind of like having. You buy the disc and they give you the free coupon. All you got to do is type in the stupid code.
So. I must have had a different Ultraviolet experience than you had.
and it seems to continue to work. It's one of the few things I will. But I have nothing horrible.
Can you download the Ultraviolet file?
I want to say you can play it locally. Yeah.
Okay.
There is a method to that madness. Right. I don't know what player. I haven't tried to do that recently. But this is something he mentioned specifically, dark scenes and pixelization and all video. Everything we look at is compressed to some degree. So, and I find, and I saw this on a TV I was calibrating last week. They were watching Game of Thrones, and I think it was with an Apple TV device, and they were streaming it through HBO.
And there was a fire, and it turned into big blocks. Of
I was like,
fire.
This really does look like crap, but it's not your TV doing it. It is the signal itself. Your source material was encoded with that artifact in it.
Right.
And. Guess what? You have a TV good enough to be perceiving these artifacts and to be more critical of your content, and you should be, and to be aware that, dark scenes are often the place where if compression is applied to too much, there's
dark
too
scenes,
much compression.
Full-screen explosions, full-screen fires.
A flash from a camera when it lights up a scene, you'll see that pixelate the whole picture at once. That happens on just about everything you see nowadays, even broadcast TV.
Yeah. When you have, like, let's say I am a head talking on a screen with a blue background, and the blue background doesn't change, there's very little work, there's very little bandwidth required to do that because it just basically records the changes on the pixels as your lips move or your eyeballs dart around inside of your skull. When you have something that's covered the entire screen, and there's a lot of information there, and it's changing because it's an explosion or a giant wave or something, then it has to encode every single corner of the screen simultaneously, and then it needs more bandwidth than you can get through Netflix or Amazon Prime or anything else.
True.
Which is one of the primary advantages, along with color accuracy not having to wait for things to...
color should be the equivalent, similar on discs and broadcasts and things like that, and even streaming to a degree.
Well,
although with streaming, it's a big mystery box that you're sitting behind, so...
It's gotten better. I mean, it was...
Nothing is going to beat your Blu-ray disc. That's your reference standard for comparing what a scene should look like versus any other source material.
And the problem, Mike, is that the people that are posting these videos online for you to steal or not pay for, if you prefer that.
Hey, it might be open source projects or something.
It might be, but it's not. maybe it is. I don't know. And I apologize, Mike, if I offended
you.
But the thing is, right, if you want to have a download that's not going to take all of the BitTorrent for all of the days and it's 1080p, then you're going to have to squeeze the snot out of it.
Exactly. And what is the goal of the person who encoded that video to begin with? And it probably wasn't to do a bit-for-bit copy.
Right.
If it was Blu-ray to begin with, maybe it's 720p now. Right. So they reduced the resolution and they... If you're lucky, you had somebody that actually went through the video with their software tool and determined what would be the best way to lay out the bit rate across the whole video, rather than have it be a fixed constant bit rate. Maybe apply more bit rate to scenes that need it versus the scenes that don't. However, if they just ran this through a cookie cutter style encoder, where it's like, we're gonna have an average bit rate of this to get this file size, that's the unfortunate endpoint you're kind of dealing with. Sources of unknown origin, so to speak. So, up the quality of the content you're looking at. Make sure your TV's set up right, of course. That's always going to help.
There are places on the internet that I have actually never been to, and I'm not saying that tongue-in-cheek. you know,
I go everywhere.
You go everywhere. I'm just there are, you know, torrent, kind of like private torrent sites, basically. And I, ironically, a couple of the wealthiest people I know refuse to pay for media because they don't believe in it. I don't really understand that, but maybe that's how they got wealthy, because they don't have 300 Blu-rays like I do.
Blu-ray.
But the, you know, there are sort of private hidden trading sites that have extremely high quality, if not like ISO rips of Blu-rays. Personally, Mike, I would appreciate it, as somebody who wants Hollywood to keep making movies, if you would find some way to, you know, get the people who made the movie paid.
Hollywood ain't losing any money.
Hollywood ain't losing any money, but
in fact, they're record profits.
Well, yeah, I know. I mean, the problem is like the grips and the camera.
I personally go on sites like the Pirate Bay to look at what their top 100 is, to see what are people using those services for. 99% of it's TV shows. It's crazy. All y'all are trading videos. Like, software in the top 100, there's maybe like two titles of software. The rest of it's TV shows and movies.
And those are really just there to make sure they can infect the people stupid like enough to install apps.
Probably you could guess
on
what one of the two are. So it's just like, hey, it doesn't even matter. But yeah.
Does it have the word shop in its name?
Then again, I was, yes, of course. That was one of them. The other one, some company in Redmond.
Could be Office, could be Windows 10. Could be. I'm guessing Office.
Probably, since most people get Windows 10 for free. Anyway. I like looking at those sites just to see what's out there and what people are up to. But again, I also browse through my local retail stores to look at their bargain bins for specifically for Blu-ray movies, and now increasingly for ultra high def Blu-ray movies. So, you know, I know where the good quality is, and I know that downloading Blu-rays. It off of some suspect source ain't it.
I gotta say, like, there used to be a bigger difference between Blu-rays and streaming Netflix or Amazon. It doesn't really become irritating to me until, like, I've said this like 9 times already in the last 5 minutes, but fires, rainstorms, explosions.
Complex scenes.
That's the
are
start
tough
to
encode and at reasonable bit rates.
You know, and they're tougher. If your neighborhood has, everybody's watching, you know, Game of Thrones on Sunday night, it's a little rougher on, you know, whatever streaming service, whatever CDN.
But this was, I was surprised, actually. I was looking at it on an Apple TV at 1080p. Output from the HBO streaming app,
right?
And there was compression in that, and it was just like, it surprised me a little bit, honestly. You'd think, especially with a premium title like that, that series is, that they would, I don't know, apply a few more bits, or it could have been this person's internet connection.
I think
too.
I gotta say, because we're looking at like 100 megabit down at my 100 to 125 megabit down at my house.
About what we have,
and there's certain times of day when it gets a little kerfuffled, to use a highly technical term, but most of the time we are having zero issues with artifacts.
I use a lot of other streaming apps like Netflix and MLB TV on Apple TV and other devices, and I wasn't seeing, then again, baseball, you're not dealing with subtle dark scenes that are firelit, at least not any baseball I've seen recently. Anyway, so
baseball by firelight.
Just be aware that if you want to really test two sources of video, like a Blu-ray and a DVD, look in those dark scenes, and well, a DVD, you're gonna have
resolution. I just have to say, it's torch night here at Giant Stadium.
Tiki night.
Two scenes, Blu-ray, DVD.
Yeah, or that's harder to do. If you could do, like, say, especially TV or anything broadcast, like that movie they're showing on TV, if you can put the same scene up with a Blu-ray content or a Blu-ray copy of that same content. You will, especially on a 1080p TV, you're going to see the difference.
Yeah, and seriously, you know, if you don't have Blu-ray players, a decent Blu-ray player is like $50 now.
Yeah,
you know, buy a Blu-ray player.
You probably have one laying around, don't even know it.
Yeah, get 4 or 5 of your favorite movies, buy them on Blu-ray. You know, look for the $10 Blu-rays on Amazon.com. There are some tremendous titles, and have a few things that can really define the experience for yourself. And understand that if you are not paying for your media and you are downloading off of a site and you don't have, you know, it's from the cloud to mock a BitTorrent or the internet or me, understand that the quality is not going to be as good. You know, unless you can find the secret tribes of people that trade this stuff before all of them get written up by the, you know, FBI.
Or that despecialized version of Star Wars. That was pretty awesome.
That needs to remain free. George Lucas should subsidize the freedom of that file.
How many copies of that movie do I own?
You know what? Got a great question from Tom in Fremont, California about HDR10 and Dolby Vision. Hi, Robert and Patrick. HDR seems to be the next big thing coming to TVs. You are correct, Tom. Can you explain the differences, if any, between HDR 10 and Dolby Vision? This is great. Because this is kind of the spec battle. This is the 56K modem of 2016 or 2017, except that they're, well, okay, let's start with the basics, right? HDR, high dynamic range. When you're looking at advances in televisions in the last decade, 3D was basically a MacGuffin. We need to sell more televisions, so let's make everybody want 3D. Well, Airbenders killed that. Not to, you know, blame Airbenders, but I think if Airbenders hadn't sucked so bad, 3D might have had a chance, but...
It wasn't until suddenly that 3D TVs are going away that I find more people asking about them, it seems. It's like, but I need 3D.
Don't I need... For what? For your underwater moray eel?
For gaming or for Netflix streaming or for something. There's a reason. Or for that collection of Blu-ray 3D movies they have.
The thing that was supposed to be the killer app for 3D was live sporting events, but unfortunately it means you have to have twice the cameras, twice the cabling, and all new trucks, which is a extraordinary investment. And it just didn't happen. So then came 4K, which is great if you're sitting 2 feet from the screen. But as you get farther away, it becomes less and less of a difference.
Or for big screens.
For big screens.
It's always nice to have more pixels.
Yes, you say to the man with a 110-inch projection screen from a 1080p projector who has, of all my complaints about it, they all have to do with blacks and color accuracy, but sorry, we have people waving us. Who's leaving? Who's there? We've lost someone, people. We're in the warehouse with the
is that what this is?
No. I think it's a warehouse.
I think it is too. You're right though, but when you talk about contrast, the high dynamic range in particular, you compare what a projector can do, where it's a lot of issues related to, well, one, how black can a projector make black, which is something, you know, a light Canon generally isn't that great at.
My 7-year-old projector is not nearly as good at it as the newer projectors, right?
And without a doubt, the newest TVs that support HDR now are, and the LCD side, are delivering 3, 4, 5 times the light output that previous generations of TVs were capable of, and a supporting format, the HDR formats, that enable video information to be encoded to take advantage of that increased luminance information that's available. There's a greater range now, greater stepped scale, in a sense, going from pure black to peak white. And in addition to that, it's also color. Those two things, HDR plus a dramatically improved palette of color to choose from, far more saturated reds, blues, and greens. Those together bring you
more
the
colors,
HDR,
better colors
experience.
But most importantly, as you get to the things at the far end of the of you know, the brights and the darks, there's more detail, there's more richness, and we're tuned for contrast a lot more than we are tuned for color. But HDR delivers both. One of the things you pointed out is that both HDR 10 and Dolby Vision are based on research from Dolby.
Yeah.
You know, the electro-optical transfer function.
Yeah, baby. That sounds so good. back in the day, we had this thing called gamma that was the representation of, given a voltage input, a certain amount of light comes out of the pixel. Right. And how that scaling works from, quote-unquote, 0 to 100%. It's not linear, at least in the old HD function. Now, when you talk about a much greater range of luminance information that's now available with the HDR formats, they needed something beyond the gamma, basically, to handle that expression and that encoding of the information. And that's what they call the EOTF, the electro-optical transfer function. And like you mentioned, too, Dolby's work on this function actually ended up being incorporated not only into Dolby Vision, one of the two HDR standards, but also HDR 10. They both use a very similar core component. So in that sense, there's a lot to them that's very similar.
Right.
Also, we mentioned too a bit about color. Both of these formats have container support for something called Rec 2020 Color. Mm-hmm. And that exceeds the color palette or the available saturation of color compared to even the DCI P3 standard that we use in commercial projection in your movie theaters.
Right.
And let alone the Rec 709 standard that we've pretty much finally got nailed with the latest few generations of TVs that are able to do just about many TVs now can easily hit Rec 709 color, HD color. Right. That includes broadcast too. Anything you see on TV is all done to that one particular standard. And going forward, HDR 10 and Dolby Vision are there to bring it all together with the improved color support, improved dynamic range, and of course the higher resolution. Mm-hmm. One difference between both formats is the metadata that's associated with the formats themselves.
Right.
Dolby's format for Dolby Vision, it actually can provide a dynamic frame per frame or per scene changes within how the luminance information is encoded. Basically the dynamic range of it. It can actually look at per scene or per even per frame and make changes along the way. Whereas with HDR 10, it pretty much is a set and forget setting. It's like this movie is going to be in like an, you can think of it as an average in a sense. Right. This movie will have an average HDR factor of 5. So we're going to put it there and it's going to be pretty static throughout the entire movie. It effectively static. So that to me is the one big difference. Is there a visual difference that could be perceived on anybody's TV today? Comparing content similarly encoded with careful quality for HDR 10 and Dolby Vision, I don't think so. I would love to see some differences. We're still in that birthing stage, I think, or the toddler stage of HDR at this point. So getting good quality content out that's been vetted by a few thousand eyeballs to make sure that was done properly, in addition to finding content in both formats that can be compared directly.
Right.
That's all challenging right now. So, there are some technical differences between the two formats for Dolby Vision and HDR 10, but
I mean, it's
bringing lots of goodness.
Yeah, and both of them are bringing lots of goodness. The frustrating thing is HDR 10 is static, right? It basically
specifically for the luminance encoding, it's like a fixed setting effectively. Right. It's like, you know, how much HDR are we going to need on this movie? And I'm just guessing. Oh, yeah. One other thing about, at least in terms of on the content creation side of things, here's another big difference. When I talk to the production houses about HDR 10 and Dolby Vision, it seems to be the case that unless you are a mega Hollywood production house with the right connections, you aren't getting just not any run-of-the-mill production house is getting the specific Dolby hardware that's needed to encode in the Dolby Vision format. There is a black box that's required. And I'm finding that even some respectable content creation houses that I'm working with here in the Bay Area, I have yet to meet one that actually has the magic Dolby Vision box in their possession. They want to experiment with it. They want to work with it. But
they want to be able to offer the services of using it for their clients.
Exactly. And to be able to say that, oh, we work in all formats, blah, blah, blah. But right now, everyone I'm talking to is going HDR 10 because it's open. Right. There is no magic black box that has to sit in the middle. And so I think at least in terms of independent production and for some of the, you know, not ultra uber top tier production houses, they're going to be sticking with HDR 10. And in the end, I don't think this is really going to... I hope there are significant differences that we can look at visually and see easily between encoding for HDR 10 and Dolby Vision. But at this stage of the game, I have heard no reports of it whatsoever. And it's kind of an early stage issue.
It isn't as bad as Blu-ray versus HD DVD, which was a nightmare. When, you know, HDVD came out, Blu-ray came out, battles ensued, and finally a giant check was cut simply to slice HDVD's throat.
Goodbye, and
eventually,
Toshiba.
Yeah, and eventually, you know, Blu-ray, they finished the spec and made the disc much more interesting to use or much more functional, but I'm still a little cranky about that.
I still don't own a Blu-ray writer. I have a couple of cheap. Plenty of Blu-ray drives. But
well, so, you know, HDR 10... you know, the biggest thing is if your television doesn't support HDR 10, you cannot watch Ultra HD Blu-rays.
True.
So
there's only one brand out there right now that if you're shopping today, that would be the case for, and that's the new Vizio TVs, the M and the P series in particular. They don't, as of yet, have HDR 10 support built in. So hold off on buying that Blu-ray player if you just bought the new Vizio TV.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, right? Because HDR 10, Amazon uses it, Netflix uses it, Sony and Samsung use it.
Pretty much the first out the gate in terms of what you could watch streaming.
We expect Vizio to have it eventually. Amazon and Netflix also, I understand, use Dolby Vision. Netflix definitely. Vudu apparently uses Dolby Vision. LG and Vizio and TCL all support Dolby Vision. Vizio supports Dolby Vision. Pretty much if you want...
Not Samsung.
not Samsung.
They prefer open standards.
Yeah, you know, and part of what's crazy about Dolby Vision, it's very closely tied to Dolby Cinema, which may be why it seems like only the studios can get a hold of Dolby Vision. In theory, 4K Blu-ray could, you know, encode Dolby Vision, but Dolby Vision decoding is optional for Blu-ray players, HD Blu-ray players, or Ultra HD Blu-ray players, which is kind of moot because there's like one right now. But eventually I would expect a second and possibly even a third. Yeah,
in Dolby Vision yet.
It's a theory. It could happen.
And I know that Panasonic's Ultra HD Blu-ray player is out in Europe. I don't know if it's out here yet. So here in the good old US of A, we have all of one UHD Blu-ray player to choose from. So.
Yeah.
Thank you, Samsung.
There you have it.
Send me one.
Please. Got a question about Calman Home Express, which is a calibration tool. Todd writes, I'm wondering if you could provide some insight on how useful Calman Home Express Edition is. Apparently, it comes with some sort of sensor. Does it allow you to get into and make improvement inside service menus without the fear of screwing something up? Have they started to market it to compete with Spears and Munsell, etc.? So if you haven't heard about Spears and Munsell, it is essentially a Blu-ray or a DVD you can use to make sure things aren't egregiously wrong with your screen, that the contrast isn't blowing up too high, or the brightness isn't blowing up too high, or the colors are in the right neighborhood. They're fantastic. We've talked about some of the alternatives, over the past few weeks. As Robert is fond of saying, you can't really calibrate a television without hardware.
Yeah.
Period.
No.
You
not
can
at
make
all.
It look less sucky, but you can't necessarily make it look right.
Not at all. And having a hardware meter, and the one he mentioned in particular, the Home Express package, includes a pretty decent meter. I'm trying to look up what the price of this is here. Let's see. Calman Home Express. Da 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 da. Da, 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 da. Of course, I can't seem to find a price on it anywhere to save me. Out of stock. That's what I get. There we go. Oh, wait. There we go. $99. So that is super affordable. And looking over the product page, it does include the tools you would need to do a 2-point grayscale adjustment. Nice. And you will need a meter to do that. And that's the single most important adjustment you're going to make on any TV. Once you get all the basic controls taken care of, like a relatively decent factory calibrated picture preset, you've got the video processing minimized, you've got the overscan corrected, and then you go and dig into, and you've got your video processing set up appropriate. And that's where those test discs like, you know, Spears and Munsell or the... AVS 709 disc you can download for free. Those are great for checking all those presets, making sure things like sharpness isn't turned up too high, or your brightness isn't turned down too low, or you don't have contrast cranked out and blowing out your peak end. Once that's done, and then you can get into that grayscale adjustment using the white balance controls in that pretty much every TV supports. I think for $99 for this particular meter, for the majority of HDTVs out there, it would be better than nothing. You'd have to spend $250 or more to get a better meter with the appropriate software with it. This will probably do a pretty damn good job, especially on the bright end of the grayscale, which is the most important and the easiest to adjust. So, and for $100, it looks like you could probably use this on multiple TVs. So that's the other good thing.
I'm hearing a go for it.
I would try it. You can't really beat that price for a hardware meter and some software to drive it. And chances are that will be compatible with some more advanced software packages out there that are free that you can check out. And I'll link to a couple of those as well. But And let me...
And that would also, you could use that to calibrate, say, computer monitors or...
Now, Todd, in this case, also mentioned about diving into the service menus of a TV.
You can always kill a TV from the service menus.
With a quickness. There is almost no reason to go into those hidden menus anymore. All the things I talk about in terms of making adjustments can be done from within the user accessible menus that are easily resettable within the regular TV menus. There are some useful things to do within a TV service menu, like see how many hours it's really been run when you're buying it, but before you buy that used set or something like that. But otherwise, there is no reason, and nor do I recommend going into a TV service menu. If you're going to ignore me, please take pictures of everything before you touch anything, because you will probably need to put it back to exact values. It's a very arcane place to be. So
why is my screen pink? Why is my screen black? Well, yeah. I can almost see, if I hold a flashlight up, I can see something that looks like the menu. Maybe I can get the backlight back on if I go through the menuing system.
I have a valid reason to go into Samsung TVs pretty frequently in the fact that they provide a complete factory reset switch right inside of there. It's a little easier to deal with than some of the regular menus in terms of getting that TV to just like an out-of-box state. Beyond that, though, yeah, stay out of the service menus, people. You're looking for something called the white balance controls when you're using a product like Calman's Home Express or a similar sensor that's basically measuring the red, the blue, and the green values and trying to get them balanced to give you an even consistent shade of gray. And this provides the basic setup that would get you pretty damn good results, I think, with a two-point setup, which is the easiest to do. That's something I would love to just show people real quick. If you have one of these tools, you know what, for $90, maybe I should just see if they send me one. And that way we could demo it with the software that's included. I'm used to a pretty extensive software package from the Calman folks, and it's as convoluted as you can get into. It's as arcane as you want to. How deep do you want to dive? There you go. However, with a package like this for home users, and I'd like to see how easily and concisely they present the data and get you right to what you need to do without, you know, avoiding those possible pitfalls and things like that.
But it can be a little maddening. I mean,
no. But for $90, it really makes me want to try it out, because then I could point to it and say, there you go. You can get your TV in the ballpark, you can get your neighbor's TV in the ballpark. Trade services.
I'll tell you what, we break $500 this month, we will buy
the Home Express.
A Calman Home Express. We break $5 on Patreon. Patreon.com/AVXL.
They have a meter I want to buy. Oh,
we should probably just buy it anyway, because we owe our patrons for our...
I want a new meter, but it's in the four-digit price tag.
The four-digit price tag. If we hit $4,000 this month, which we're not going to do.
Or a Klein, what is it? Klein K10A. That's what I really need. But I think that's like...
$40 million.
It's getting closer to five digits.
That's a lot of money. But it's a professional tool, though.
But that is the meter to have. If you want the best, the Klein K10A. Don't ask how much it costs.
Nice. This podcast and possibly someday even video is made possible to you by you. We bring this to you because you make it possible, because you donate to patreon.com/AVXL. We got our first viewer hangout coming this month, and also our first of our movie club.
Oh yeah.
So I'm trying to decide if we should start with, you know, something classic black and white, or something classic like a certain film involving a tumbleweed and a rug.
Hey, that's always good. I just rewatched the Firefly series again.
We're not going to watch the entire Firefly series, but it might be fun to watch the first episode or the movie.
There's some good episodes.
A couple of
primo episodes in that.
Preacher just started on AMC. Which, very cool. If you are deeply religious or deeply easy to offend, you probably don't want to check out. It's a Garth Ennis comic book that is legendary and epic and frightening and awesome and lots of other things. Violence, mayhem, drinking, bombs, vampires, but not charming. Well, actually, Cassidy is kind of charming, but that's a whole other conversation.
I'm trying to think, what else am I watching? I am kind of missing the Apple TV at my mom's house, because it had CSN Sports Network on it.
And oh, that's funny.
What a nice app. If you happen to have cable or satellite service,
right,
and you can subscribe or you can log into that account, that interface provides you all the replays of all the major, if you're into motorsports or I think it was Premier League football and other things like that. They make it real easy just to get right to the content you want and just get right into it. So,
oh my goodness.
That app was unavailable on my current Samsung Smart TV, and I was kind of missing it. I was just like, oh, man.
I will admit I've watched Deadpool at least twice.
That's – what did I just buy? I bought a Blu-ray of the Keanu Reeves movie, John something.
John Wick. That is an incredible movie.
I can't wait to watch that.
That would be a great one to watch on a TV with really good blasts.
Deadpool's on my short list. I got to watch that. I need to laugh.
Yeah, John Wick is outstanding.
I need to get my UHD Blu-ray player set up.
Yes, you do.
Done.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Batman vs. Superman Ultimate Edition Blu-ray is coming, including a giant collection of either really interesting or really, really awful additional features. I'm kind of curious to finally see that one. reactions to that movie have been complicated.
Interesting.
Which is my new understatement of the month. Gosh, what else is coming out this week?
Oh, did I tell you I got to pet the Yoda statue at a certain place within the Presidio here in San Francisco?
It's on public property.
It is.
Although if you go there at like midnight to pet Yoda,
I might get
in the Presidio.
Rousted.
The security guard will certainly walk over and make sure you're not doing anything terrible.
I didn't pet Yoda. Yoda's actually a fountain with water spraying all over it. So I think they changed it. I don't think they have. And then there was a Darth Vader statue very nearby. And I was in that building.
I don't know about the Darth Vader statue.
And I have to say, I'm in these places that produce content.
Yeah.
The stuff, they are the ones who, they're the gatekeepers before it reaches your eyeballs. And the array of misconfigured monitors that I had to look through, I was stunned.
Was it emotionally traumatizing?
No, but it put me on a mission to just verify that the people who make this stuff are actually looking at their content on properly configured display systems. Because I'm like, how could it not be that, of all people?
Oh, my goodness.
If I'm going to give anyone a talking to, it's going to be the people who are producing this content. Some are exceptional and very, I hate to use the word anal, but very peculiar about their, they know exactly how it should be and the way everything's on target. But there are other places where it's a grind fest of work and they're just too busy to think about much. And that's where I gladly step in and say, let me just at least make what you're looking at look right.
Oh, my goodness. Strange week for Blu-ray releases. Not a ton of stuff came out. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies in 4K.
Looking forward to it.
Looks good. Not the most, I don't know. It's either a movie you're going to love or hate. I don't even, you know, if you know Pride and Prejudice and you know Zombies, the two of those things together is either sounding like a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup or something that came out of a dog's breakfast or was in a dog's breakfast. Gods of Egypt 4K Blu-ray. I won't be watching that
one.
Now You See Me came out in 4K Blu-ray, which might be interesting to watch. It was kind of funny. Pixar re-released or pumped out Finding Nemo, Wall-E, and The Incredibles earlier this week, I assume in anticipation of increased Blu-ray sales. And as far as I know, they are the same versions from before.
Incredibles was a great movie.
Yeah, well, it's kind of crazy, right? Because you look at like Finding Nemo, there's the 4-disc set, the 3-disc set.
Oh, jeez. That's a lot of Nemo.
The Blu-ray with DVD packaging.
I'm not even sure what a Nemo is, but I'll take your word for it.
You haven't seen Finding Nemo?
Probably not.
Finding Nemo?
I've seen a lot of things.
I can't believe you haven't seen Finding Nemo. Basically, it's just,
I'm not a huge animation person, and I have friends who work for all the companies that make that stuff too, and it's not that I'm not aware of it. I'm looking for Deadpool, man.
unless
it's R-rated, suddenly my interest is just plummeting.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Wim Wenders, The Road Trilogy came out on Criterion if you're looking for something particularly. If you know who Wim Wenders is, you're either engaged by the idea or horrified by the idea of spending a lot of quality time there. By the way, if you haven't seen it on Amazon Prime, The Man in the High Castle.
Oh, without a doubt. Philip K. Dick story, right?
Well, like many Philip, you know, and
I mean, it's based on something he wrote, isn't it?
Yes. But I mean, it's like, you know, Blade Runner is based on a Philip K. Dick story. I've read the Philip K. Dick story. I've seen Blade Runner. There's a lot
Total
of
Total Recall, baby.
You know, the man could rock a plot like
the greatest
human
movie
beings
ever.
On yeah. Well,
no, that's Starship Troopers.
I love Starship
I
Troopers.
I do too.
Blu-ray is not kind to the special effects in Starship Troopers.
It don't
Troopers.
Matter.
It doesn't.
There was a lot of physical effects that carry nicely.
Would you like to learn more?
Bug Splat.
Oh, my goodness. Don writes in, what Bluetooth headphones do you recommend for home theater listening? I use the Roku remote. Well, actually, so Don is another very, you know, quick question. What Bluetooth headphones do you recommend for home theater listening? And because I didn't put a line break in there, I immediately started my answer. I almost entirely... use either the headphone jack on the Roku remote, which is an unbelievably fantastic invention, although it does chew through batteries, or I use a cable because, you know, it's just I have a lot of really nice headphones and I want to use my really, really nice headphones. You know, I'm sitting here next to a pile of craziness, you know, AudioQuest Nighthawks, T50 RPs, Mark III's from Fostex, Hofheimer HE400, Sennheiser Moment. You know what I mean? Like there is
a pile of headphones.
Well,
there.
Actually, and also the Odyssey Sign, which is the first time I've had a chance to play around with a lightning cable to headphones. And I'm...
Not horrified?
I'm not horrified. I really don't want to have to plug in it. You know, the truth is irritating. It'll be irritating to plug an adapter into a phone to use regular headphones with it.
A lot of bulk.
It depends on how they design. It depends on how they engineer it. I wait with bated breath to see what if our friends at Apple kill off the headphone jack. But that's a discussion for probably later this year. So Don was wondering about Bluetooth headphones for home theater listening. Like I said, I because I have so many headphones, I use a cable. I use the Roku remote.
I have a pair of those Samsung level headphones that are wireless Bluetooth with noise cancellation. They're fairly comfortable.
Yeah,
I don't know what the hell they cost. But.
Well, the other thing is you know, Bluetooth does not suck. You know, Bluetooth 4.0 is pretty fantastic. AptX is pretty cool. You can get some really good audio over a Bluetooth connection these days.
I use a Bluetooth speaker with my TV in my bedroom.
Yeah.
And just for when I want to walk around with the audio a little bit more. But headphones, you know what? I'm now tempted. I haven't actually connected my headphones via Bluetooth to the TV. So.
Well, that's what's interesting. Like, you know, that was part of my question. Part of my issue is I'm also not a big fan of headphones that require batteries.
Yeah, that I understand.
You know, or recharging. But the other thing is, you know, Don, does your AVR support Bluetooth or does your television support Bluetooth for connection to the headphones? You know, if you want to spend all the money, and have the most amazing sound quality for Bluetooth, probably Sennheiser Momentum 2.0 wireless. Those are costing about $400. That's a lot of money. Sony's MDR-10 RBTs sold for about $110. They're really, really good for the money. The crew over at the Wirecutters has a lot of good things to say about Jabra's Move Wireless, and I think they tried on like 4 zillion headphones in that particular roundup.
Cool.
A lot of people also love Bose SoundLink, but they're $250. Again, you know, if it's that may be pocket change, that may be serious money. A lot of people would prefer, or a lot of AVRs, if you don't have the ability to connect Bluetooth to your television or to your AVR, what you probably want is some kind of wireless headphones. And there's a really good article up on the Wirecutter that goes through the best wireless home theater headphones, and their choice is the Power Acoustic Fahrenheit HP902 RFT, which basically you plug the base station into your AVR, and in that case, they give you two sets of headphones. There's mute switches for them. You know, you can switch basically between different inputs. It's a pretty slick device. And you get two sets of headphones. So if you're watching with someone else, like if it was me and my wife and we wanted to watch Deadpool without waking up the children screaming, that would be a way to do it.
Too late!
And they sell for $77, which is unbelievably cheap. If you want something that is delivering a little more oomph and better overall audio quality, you can spend $200 for Sennheiser's RS-165s. But that is a single pair of headphones for $200 versus a pair of headphones on the Power Acoustics for $77. And if you do decide to buy either one of those, do me a favor, go to the Wirecutter, use their link, because their research is paid for by Amazon purchases through their links. So take care of them, because they do good stuff. So, oh my goodness. And a great, great, great email from James. Speaking up for the international AVXL audience. He says, "Hi guys, just found the AVXL Home Theater podcast. I shall add it to my weekly listen list. I used to watch HD Nation, so this is a very welcome return." Thank you, James. "Very minor point," he writes, "but there's an awful lot of your content devoted to US-only streaming or TV services. I'm sure you'll be aware that your podcasts are listened by a large international audience too. Info on technologies rather than specific services are more universally appealing. With best regards from England, James." And I'm going to say, James, I hear you, right? Because...
It's a valid point.
And you know, televisions are pretty much televisions in every continent in the world. You know, Blu-ray is going to be the same. Streaming services in terms of the technology or the compression and stuff like that. What I am going to say is, James, I would love to hear from you and people in various countries around the world with what streaming services you use, you know, either in your region or in your country, what works, what doesn't work. Send us emails, tweet at us and let us know what you're finding. And we will share that and just elevate the international nature of the podcast.
Yes.
You know, the vast majority, probably 85% of our audience is in the U.S. But I'm curious what's happening overseas, especially in those parts of the world where they have much better bandwidth than we do and they pay a lot less money for it. Does that mean they have better video streaming services, or are we in the lead there? So one, we will do our best to keep it friendly for everybody who doesn't want to listen to 25 minutes of us debating the finer points of a U.S. only streaming service. I respect that.
I am unaware of a lot. So yeah. I'd love to hear what people are using.
Yeah.
Like, what is the most popular service you're currently using right now that we haven't mentioned? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
So please.
Yeah. And
ping us.
Tell us what you're using. Are you still on DVD? Do you only do over the air? Are you looking for the best way to watch? I don't know. Just we make
VHS
this show
for life.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we make this show because we like to talk about this stuff, but we also make this show because we learn a lot from everybody out there. So do us a favor, email ask@techthing.com, tweet at Robert Herron or at Patrick Norton or at AVXL. I was about to say Tech Thing.
You did say Tech Thing, but I let it go.
Thank you. He's very gracious. I was dealing with uploading problems last night, so I walked out of this warehouse about 2 hours before I walked back in.
Your inner tubes were clogged.
My inner tubes were clogged. The dump trucks were not moving on the tubes. I hate that.
Tubeless.
Tubeless. Oh, man. Still waiting for those ELAC speakers to show up.
Cool.
The Unifies, but I do have their subwoofer, which is configurable by an app on your cell phone. So I'll talk about that in the next week or two.
Nice.
I'm excited. I bought a new set of speaker stands, so I'm ready to test some bookshelf speakers, get my B&Ws back up on a proper bookshelf.
I have a couple set of speaker stands in my storage unit and the speakers to go with them. And they're all wired up and everything.
So. Well, get them out of the storage room. Invade the garage.
I have nowhere
man.
To put them.
Just move the dogs
out
in VR.
I think I'm going to get one of the TVs out of my storage unit this week, though. So
I like that.
Put it in my roommate's bedroom.
Oh, my goodness.
Here, have a TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, I can only hope we have not exhausted you, but we wanted to make up for our lack of productivity in, well, our lack of AVXL productivity in May.
I have no travel plans for the foreseeable future until August. So
we are rocking the weekly releases, people. And with that, thank you so much for your support. Patreon.com/AVXL. Keep emailing ask@AVXL. Tweet at Robert Herron, at Patrick Norton, or at AVXL. Just want to get the right name there.
Yeah.
And thank you so much. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
We'll see you next week.